ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Oh my, good. Welcome back. Welcome also to the students joining us online. We've come finally to the very end of this wonderful Uddhava Gita text. We started more than a year and a half ago. And I'll remind you that we're actually studying an abbreviated version of the Uddhava Gita. It's a little long. It's quite a bit longer than the Bhagavad Gita. So yeah, we've made the decision to choose only those chapters that are particularly relevant for students of Advaita Vedanta. There's much more there, but they're more bhakti-oriented, and you may enjoy those chapters, so you can study that independently. It's available online in several versions, so please feel free to do so. I think we'll just Sri Krishna ends this in a very nice way. I've got the wrong verse up here, so we'll just plunge in and enjoy these last verses.
Apyuddhava twaiha brahma, apyuddhava Twaya brahma sakhe samavadharitam, sakhe samavadharitam apite vigato mohaha, apite vigato mohaha shokascha sau manobhavaha, shokascha sau manobhavaha.
Api, in American English, we'd say so. Uddhava, O Uddhava. And in the next line, sakhe, O my dear friend, cousin. O Uddhava, twaya, by you, is Brahma, the supreme truth, sum of adharitam, well ascertained, completely recognized. Did you get it? is the question. So after all of this teaching, it's gone on for quite a while. It took us a year and a half. It took them however long. Didn't take them a year and a half, but it took some time. It was a fairly lengthy, 1,100 verses. Bhagavad Gita is only 700. So this is considerably longer. So with all of this teaching, did you get it, Uddhava? Api, also, te mohaha, your confusion, vigataha, has your confusion been removed? That might sound similar to the question asked by Krishna to Arjuna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Same question asked. O Arjuna, has your confusion been removed? Remember, there was a similarity in contexts, if you remember. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was extremely upset because of the war that was about to take place, in which he'd have to fight against his own family members. So, related to family. In fact, both the Uddhava Gita and Bhagavad Gita are related to families. So what an interesting observation, because Uddhava is also upset because of his family, who is about to break into two factions and kill each other off in a terrible civil war. In Dwaraka, you remember long ago we studied this, in Dwaraka, there is the home of the Vrishni clan. The Vrishni clan is about to self-destruct through civil war, and it's the end of the Kali Yuga, and Uddhava knows that this destruction is inevitable, So that's why Sri Krishna gives this teaching to Uddhava, because his family is about to destruct at the end of the Kali Yuga. That's also why I said these are teachings. I'm sorry? Oh, I said beginning. Oh, not beginning. Sorry. Thank you. By the way, there's a little brain fog today, so you'll hear me misspeak several more times before the end of the class. That's what happens. With this dizziness, I get this brain fog. Anyway. So, at the end of the Kali Yuga, and that's why these teachings, I said in our very first class, this is Sri Krishna's message for those of us living at the end of the Kali Yuga. And the Kali Yuga has apparently not ended yet. We're still here. End of the Kali Yuga means the end of the cycle of creation also. So we're still here. So the next cycle of creation has not yet started. Also, then Kali Yuga is a time of strife. And we can all easily recognize the strife going on in the world today at every level. It's just an amazing time, difficult time. Anyway, but the point I just made is that both the Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita are given, the teachings are given in the context of family problems. And the reason for that is, do you have any family problems? Everyone has family problems. So in this way, these teachings become very universal, universally relevant. Anyone who has a family will find a lot of issues dealt with and addressed in both the Bhagavad Gita and Uddhava Gita. So, Krishna asks Uddhava, api te mohaha vigataha, has your delusion been removed, your confusion, also your shokaha, your sadness, which is manobhava, asau manobhava, that which resides in your heart, the sadness in your heart, has it been removed? In the Bhagavad Gita, you remember that Arjuna says, yeah, nashto mohaha smriti labdva. He says, yes, my delusion has been removed. I've come back to my senses. Wonderful. We'll see Uddhava's response is very different. Not negative, but different. And wait a few. This is, what do they call it? The hook to keep you listening. But you'll see that Uddhava's response is wonderful, but very different than Krishna's, than Arjuna's. Okay, let's see.
Naitad twaya dambikaya, naitad twaya dambikaya, nastikaya shataya cha, nastikaya shataya cha. Ashushrushor abhaktasya, ashushrushor abhaktasya, durvinitaya diyatam, durvinitaya diyatam.
You have to connect the first word and the last. First words are na, etat, twaya, etat, this. Twaya, by you, na is not, and last word, diyatam, should be given. These teachings, Uddhava, O Uddhava, these teachings should not be given by you, meaning don't repeat anything we've said, unto whom? You shouldn't repeat these teachings unto dambikaya, unto one who has dambha. Dambha means this kind of pride and arrogance, somebody who has a bad attitude. Don't give these teachings to someone who has a bad attitude. And if you ask why, very practical. You think they want to listen to this? So don't give this teaching to someone who doesn't want to hear it. And look at the next word. He says you shouldn't give this to nastikaya. You shouldn't give this to a nastika. A common translation of nastika is atheist. But a more technical definition of nastika is one who doesn't accept the validity of the Vedas. That is a scholarly definition of nastika. It's interesting. It's not with regard to God. It's with regard to scriptures. So the scholarly definition of nastika is one who rejects the validity of the Vedic scriptures. So then we could loosely translate nastika as non-Hindu. Someone who accepts the validity of the Vedas is Hindu. That's a fundamental definition. Who is Hindu? The Buddhists are not considered Hindu, even though what they practice and teach is virtually indistinguishable from Hindu teachings, but they don't accept the validity of the Vedas, so they get their own name as Buddhists. But all those who accept the Vedas are considered Hindu. Anyone who doesn't accept the Vedas is not considered Hindu. So therefore, Sri Krishna says, you should not give this teaching to any non-Hindu. And the reason I'm making a point here is how many religions stress proselytization, conversion of others. And here Sri Krishna is saying straight out, don't do that. Don't proselytize. There's no need to proselytize. If someone has another religion and it's working for them, leave them be. If someone has no religion and that's working for them, leave them be. They don't need the help of the Hindu tradition. So this, my guru made a big point of this when he lived, because as many of you know, proselytization is a huge issue in India. It continues to be a tremendous issue even to this day. And in my guru's words, conversion is violence. He called it cultural violence. You are depriving someone of the religion which forms the backbone of their culture. So he was very outspoken on this issue. Anyway, Sri Krishna just says, don't do it. There's no scope for proselytization in this tradition. So also don't give this teaching to anyone who is shatta, somebody who is deceptive in a malicious way, someone who wants to sneak in and steal something, somebody who's very devious like that. Also, because again, do they want to hear these teachings? No. Also, you shouldn't give these teachings to someone who is a shushrusha. A shushrusha is one who wants to hear. A shushrusha, one who doesn't want to hear. Just common sense. Sadly, in the Bible, actually in the Christian Bible, not in the Jewish Bible, because the Jews don't proselytize, right? They don't. Christians do, because in the Christian Bible, which means the New Testament of the Bible, there are certain statements which really encourage proselytization. So the scripture, it says, you should spread the good news, as it's called in the Bible. But here Sri Krishna gives the opposite message. Don't. And nor should you give this teaching to anyone who is a bhaktaya, someone who does not have a shred of devotion, and also durvinita, one who is literally not self-controlled, but the implication is if you're not self-controlled, you are then engaged in harmful activities. So unto such people, these teachings should not be given, because it's either not going to help them, or in the case of conversion, in the case of religious conversion, it's harmful. Think about it. This is something unique my guru taught. He says that when you convert a Hindu to a Christian, you deprive them of their whole cultural background. It is a kind of violence, a cultural violence. Okay, let's continue.
Etar do sharvahinaya, etar do sharvahinaya, brahmanyaya priyaya cha, brahmanyaya priyaya cha, sadhaveshu cha ye bruyad, sadhaveshu cha ye bruyad, bhakti. Bhaktisya chudra yoshatam, etaihi doshaihi vihina.
Those who are free from these defects in the prior verse, those who are unlike those mentioned in the prior verse, what should you do for them? In the end of the third line, bruyat, you should teach this unto those who are unlike those we've just considered. Who are those that you should teach? You should share these teachings with brahmanya, those who are, that's okay, saintly, those who are pious, those who are dedicated, those who have a value for these teachings. Priyaya. Those who are lovable, literally, those who are pleasant. Don't teach anyone who's, I guess this is maybe to protect the teacher. If you try to teach someone who's really angry and mean and nasty, then the guru can become the victim. Only teach those who are lovable. Do teach only those who are good. Teach only those who are shuchi, pure. Teach only those who are women. Is the lowest. Things meaning quickly things Vedic rule. It is a rule. It is a Tory. Yes, that rule has been long ago. Who hang on to threads? Well, some of you, these chankra, the mathas, the chan, kanchip, those of mathas in those handful of still is. Invited for studying anything else, including Bhagavata, Purana. These have always accessible. It is inaccessible. Fashion, like I said, largely discarded. Eventually, those few holdouts, they will. Maybe not in our lifetimes, actually, because we live in different today. Time. Oh, Was there no internet? Interaction with people of different cultures? Because we're all geographically separated, widely separated. Sometimes rules like them to fit in ancient, in modern times, just a global society to keep a group trying to sense at all. All right. Just about women, quick comment. I think we've talked about this before. Unfortunate patriarchy inside every culture in the world. India, Vedic culture, Hindu culture, you said, to make an excuse for it, just to understand. Be completely wrong to say Hinduism discriminates against women. Correct to understand. And Hindu culture, like all cultures, patriarchy into it, needs to be removed and completely, in my opinion. Continuing.
Aitadvignayajignyasor atavyamavashishyate tvapiyushamamritam atavyam navashishyate atavyam navashishyate. Jignyasoho, end of the first line. For one who seeks spiritual wisdom, for a seeker of liberation, seeker of enlightenment, for one who seeks that knowledge which liberates, for such a person, etad vignaya, being understood. Understood what Sri Krishna has taught. Uddhava Gita, Krishna says, second line, nyatavyam, vashishyate, na avashishyate, remains, nyatavyam, to be known, remains. Basically saying that what I've taught you is complete, it is adequate, nothing has been left out, it's not, to use a modern term, it's not dumbed down in any way. It is a complete teaching, which means these teachings can give you moksha. One expression for moksha is amritatva, immortality. And to understand the second half, we need to understand this connection. Why is the word amritatva, immortality, and moksha, liberation, why are they considered equivalent? Has to do with our understanding of what liberation really means. Of course, in a superficial way, you are freed from rebirth. So, you know, the court Hindus believe in reincarnation. So, for those who accept the reality of reincarnation, you're not born again and again and again. So, in that obvious sense, you are freed from mortality. Mortality refers then to the suffering of getting born again and again and again. But there's a more Vedantic understanding of this immortality, and we'll see that in the second half here. The more Vedantic understanding is this. Did, right now, Atma is present as your own consciousness. When was that Atma born? There was a date when your body was born. There was a date when your body was conceived, 9 months before. But I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, when was Atma born? Atma wasn't born. Then that which is born doesn't die, right? That which is born dies. That which is not born is undying. Therefore, Atma is already immortal. Your true nature is already immortal. And moksha, or enlightenment, is to discover and recognize the truth of who you already are. You already are an immortal conscious being in essence, and that essence, the truth of who you are, is to be discovered. So with that meaning of amritam, immortality in mind, the second half will make sense. Pitwa, it's a metaphor. What a lovely metaphor. Piyusha is nectar. So pitwa, having drunk piyusham, this nectar. What kind of nectar? Amritam, the nectar of immortality. You've heard such expressions before. Having drunk this nectar of immortality, patavyam na avashishyate, nothing else needs to be drunk. Literally, I'm just that's what he says. Patavyam, to that which needs to be drunk, na avashishyate, nothing remains. So what a lovely metaphor. And it is a metaphor. There is no such thing as a drink which gives you immortality. Although we see that in the mythological literature of probably every world culture. So in ancient India culture, in ancient Greek culture, I presume ancient Egyptian culture, though I know zero about it, I have a feeling that you'll find something equivalent to this drink of nectar of immortality in all of these cultures. But here, what do you have to drink? It's a metaphor, right? What you are drinking is knowledge. You are nice to use the word imbibe, because we use that word both for drinking and for other things as well. You can imbibe in some drink. You can imbibe this knowledge, this wisdom. And by imbibing this wisdom, you gain enlightenment. You become free from suffering, which is referred to here as amritatvam, immortality. All right. Then. Jnane karmani yoge cha. Jnane karmani yoge cha. Vartayam danda dharane. Tayam danda dharane. Yavanartho nrinam tata. Yavan harto nrinam tata. Tavanste ham chaturvidah. Good. Yavan, correct. All right. Start in the third line. Tata, O dear one, Sri Krishna addresses Uddhava. Yavan artaha, whatever goals, nrinam, can be achieved by people. The goals that can be achieved by people, and this is clearly a reference to the four purusharthas, the four purusharthas, the four goals of life being dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And I don't, it's a topic most of you have heard many times, and I don't want to dwell on it here. It's a little out of place. But we can say all worldly goals, all religious goals, and all spiritual goals fall into these four categories. So two of them define worldly goals. One, so kama, artha, we'll call them worldly goals. Dharma is a religious goal, going to heaven, and moksha, enlightenment. So these four goals. So with regard, and So with regard to these four goals, you can see at the last word, chaturvidaha, fourfold. So chaturvidaha artaha, these fourfold goals of life. What about these fourfold goals of life? These four goals are achieved how? Go up to the top. How do you gain these four goals? Through jnana, jnane. Through jnana, through gaining knowledge in particular. So today it's so obvious. Can you fulfill worldly goals without education? Right? What we know all so well, and this is a big issue for developing countries. Education is the most important thing for a developing country. Decades, when I was a child, India was a developing country. Not anymore. It is a developed country. It has so much education. It has so much wealth. It has so many people also, but that's another topic entirely. So, the recognition of the importance of education for fulfilling worldly goals. So jnane, through knowledge, karmani, through actions and deeds. And those actions include both worldly actions, like going to work, and they include non-worldly actions, like doing rituals. So worldly actions are good for getting a paycheck. Rituals are good for going to heaven. Both of these are included in those four goals. Yoga cha, yoga. And here in a very specific context, yoga here refers to an ancient system of yoga, in particular Patanjali's system of yoga, which was popular even today. We follow it. But in that system of yoga, you are, by doing certain practices, you can gain siddhis, superpowers, like being able to fly through the air, like being able to make yourself as tiny as an atom. So what do you have to do to get that? That? A lot of meditation, a lot of spiritual practice. So what else? And all of this is for these four goals of life. He says, vartayam, otherworldly activities. In ancient times, farming. Today, commuting an hour to reach your workplace. Commuting an hour to get home. And also, danda dharane. Interesting word for being in charge. Danda dhara is one who wields a stick. That's how they viewed boss. Boss is the one who wields the stick. Anyway, so refers to those who are in the ruling class. And here what Sri Krishna is saying, yavan artha, whatever you can gain through all of these various activities, through the activities of gaining an education, through going to work, through doing rituals, towards gaining these special powers, to farming, to commuting, to coming up in politics. He says, whatever you can accomplish by all of these, Sri Krishna says, and all of these goals, Sri Krishna says, tavan te, for you, tavan, all of them, which are chaturvidaha, belonging to these four categories, these four goals, which we talked about, for all of them, Sri Krishna says, te, for you, Uddhava, aham, I am all four of these goals. You attain all the goals of life by seeking me. And this actually refers to a statement made in the Bhagavad Gita at the very end of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, where Sri Krishna says, Mam ekam sharanam. Sri Krishna says, Mom, me, he's Vraja, you should seek seek mom, me, because I am the Ekam Sharanam. I am the one refuge. Now, refuge here, not refuge from bad guys, but refuge from suffering. I am the solution to the problem of suffering. And this brings in the whole teaching of Vedanta, which we're not going to get into. But Sri Krishna says, I am the solution. He says so in the Bhagavad Gita. Here he's saying the same thing. Te, for you, Uddhava, aham. I am the ultimate goal of life. And ultimate goal of life in this sense. If we had to look at, and what are we doing on time? I want to make sure we finish up this text today. We have time. These four goals of life, kama, fulfilling desires, artha, gaining some wealth, which is instrumental for fulfilling your desires, artha, going to heaven after this life is over, and moksha, enlightenment. So these are the chatur purusharthas, the four goals of life. There, often we make a distinction between moksha and the other three. We say moksha is the parama purushartha, the ultimate goal. The others are said to give temporary satisfaction only. So temporary satisfaction. So the first is kama. Hey, I can do that. That's pretty good. I didn't know I could do that. So big deal. All right. All right. So my point is whatever pleasure, comma is the first, whatever pleasures you fulfill are temporary. Then wealth, boy, do we know how temporary wealth is. It comes in, it goes out just as fast, and you're in trouble if it goes out faster than it comes in. So wealth is temporary, and dharma, going to heaven, one of the unique features of the Hindu tradition is heaven is considered temporary. Other world religions consider it eternal, not in Hinduism. Heaven is temporary. You go to heaven based on a finite amount of accumulated good karmas. And just like you get reborn again and again, sooner or later you get reborn out of heaven into some other situation. So all of these are temporary. There is one that is not temporary. As we said before, Atma was never born, therefore not subject to death. That kind of immortality, moksha, enlightenment, is the discovery of that. And Sri Krishna says, I am that. And the two senses for that is that, one, Sri Krishna says again and again in this Uddhava Gita, Sri Krishna says that that consciousness within you, which is unborn, uncreated, unscathed by worldly sufferings and not subject to death, Sri Krishna says, I am that inner reality. What we often refer to loosely as a divinity within, which Vedantins call Satchidananda Atma, Sri Krishna boldly says again and again and again, I am. I am that. I am Satchidananda Atma. I am that inner divinity. I am the truth of who you are. So in that sense, Sri Krishna says, Teham, I am for you, Uddhava, all four goals of life, permanent contentment. Also, he says it in a different sense. Who is giving this teaching is Sri Krishna. Through these teachings, you fulfill the goals of life, including that parama purushartha, the ultimate goal of life. So as both the means to the end and the end, The means to the end are these spiritual teachings coming from Sri Krishna, and the goal itself is Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna is both the means and the end, and that's what he says in this verse, leading us to his last verse. The last verse spoken by Sri Krishna in the Uddhava Gita. It has the longer meter here. Martyo yada tyakta samasta karma. Martyo yada tyakta samasta karma. Naveditatma vichikirshito me. Naveditatma vichikirshito me. Tadamritatvam pratipadyamano. Tadamritatvam pratipadyamano. Mayatma bhuyaya cha kalpate vai. Mayatma bhuyaya cha kalpate vai. So Sri Krishna concludes in this way. Yada, when, martyaha, a mortal person, when that mortal person is tyakta samasta karma, when that mortal person tyakta, when he or she gives up samasta karma, all activities means, hey, that's kind of good, you don't have to commute to work on Monday. That's what he says. Remember teachings of karma yoga? Anyway, we won't get into all the details right now. This is the penultimate verse. This is not time for a detailed discourse. So when a person gives up, let's put it in this context. When a person gives up seeking contentment, happiness, and peace through worldly activities, put it like that. So it means you still have to go to work Monday. Sorry. That's karma yoga, after all. And Sri Krishna, that's one of his favorite topics. But it says here, when a person gives up all deeds, and that person is niveditatma, his atma here doesn't mean satchidananda. It means oneself in a general sense.
When a person dedicates himself or herself to me, when that person vichikitsitaha,
when that person is focused on me, has determined that what I want is Sri Krishna. But Sri Krishna, as described in the prior verse. How did Sri Krishna describe himself in the prior verse? We said in two ways, one as a guru who is imparting these teachings, and secondly, as the goal, as the divinity within, as Satchidananda Atma. So one who devotes himself or herself to me, what about that person? When that person gives up all worldly activities and devotes himself or herself exclusively to me, tada, then amritatvam, the word I said before, amritam literally means not, sorry, amritam literally means not dead. That's the literal meaning of it, not dead. Amritatvam is the proper word for immortality. So immortality pratipadyate is obtained. That person obtains immortality. How? By giving up chasing after happiness through worldly activities and by dedicating himself or herself to a life of spiritual growth. That nicely paraphrases the first three quarters of this verse, leading to the Sri Krishna's concluding statement, Mayatma bhuyaya cha kalpate vai. Vai, indeed, that person, kalpate, is able to, maya, Atma Bhuyaya. Atma Bhuyaya. Become, it's idiomatic, Maya. Atma Bhuyaya. Become one with me. The person's self becomes one with me. That person becomes non-separate from me. That person, common language, that person merges into me. I embrace that person. This is described in so many different ways by different teachers and different texts. But it all means the same thing. And that is the goal, the ultimate goal, is Sri Krishna is present. The nice expression. Sri Krishna is present within you as your true nature. That last part is important. Because Sri Krishna is present within you, but separate from you. That's not what's being taught here. And there are texts and traditions that seem to imply Sri Krishna, that in fact, the biblical traditions have this problem. They say you have a divine soul. And somehow, if you have a divine soul, doesn't that mean you are the one who has and the soul is something you have? Isn't that a duality? You have a divine soul. That's not what Sri Krishna is saying here. He's not saying you have an inner divinity. He's saying you are that inner divinity. This is such an important point. You do not have a divine soul. You are a divine conscious being stuck inside one of these things. That's what Sri Krishna is teaching here. You don't have. In fact, when I was a child, this confused me to no end. I was raised in a Roman Catholic church, and they told me that when you die, your divine soul will go to heaven or hell. And even as a child, I had this question. Okay, my divine soul goes to heaven and hell, but what happens to me? Even a child can ask that question. So let us not make that mistake. Sri Krishna does not say you have a divine soul. Sri Krishna says you are a divine being, a divine conscious being, and with this body and mind. And with those words, Sri Krishna concludes his discourse to Uddhava. Now, we said before, we want to find out when Sri Krishna finished teaching Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says, I get it. Nashto mohaha. My delusion is removed. So we left that question hanging before. What is Uddhava's response? And I suggested it's very different, but very positive. And we see that not spoken by Uddhava, but we remember we have this tradition of a story within a story within a story. So now we are popping out, so to speak, from the story, which talks about the dialogue between Sri Krishna and Uddhava. We're popping up a level to the earlier level of story, which is a dialogue between Shuka, the son of Vyasa, who's in the role of teacher here, who is teaching King Parikshit, who is the great or grandson of Arjuna. Anyway, this dialogue, it doesn't make any difference, but anyway, that's the story. It's kind of the basic story of the entire Bhagavata Purana. And since we've been focused on this Uddhava Gita, we haven't really seen much of that story. I think in our first class we talked about it a bit, but Shuka is the guru, the teacher in the top top story here. And Shuka then describes to the king, who has a curse, he's describing what is Uddhava's response to all of this. Vacha, Shri Shuka Vacha. Longer meter. Saheva Madharshita Yoga Margas. Eva Madharshita Yoga Margas. Tama Shloka Vacho Nishamya. Shloka Vacho Nishamya. Anjali Dhakanto. Anjali Yuddhanto. Cheru Chaha. Cheru Shup Chaha. We'll come to that. It just went back on. World? Hello?
Let me just check one thing here. Hello? I need to see this. This is the receiver for the wireless mic. I would like to find it. The problem with intermittent problems is you can only fix them when they're bad. Oh, battery.
That's what it is. This battery is gone. Okay. Going? Okay, well, we'll need to get some. Not now, but I've got a little bit left on this.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we've got enough juice left to finish this class. Exactly. It's still going in and out. Excuse me just a minute. I would like to know what is going on here. It says battery, but it shows two bars. Oh, so battery is two bars. It's okay. All right. I have no idea what's going on. We'll see. Okay. Let's try to finish this up before any other technical problems come. So, Saha, Uddhava. Uddhava, who is? Test. In and out, even now. Yeah, test. Now, why? Sorry, I need to see this display right here. I don't know what else to do. Test. All right. How's this? Okay, we have to quickly finish this class before... We have more technical problems here. Okay. Evam, thus, Uddhava who was Adarshita Yoga Margas. Uddhava, who was Adarshita, he was shown. He was presented with what? Yoga Margas, this path of yoga, the spiritual teaching which leads to enlightenment. And this Yoga Marga, these teachings on enlightenment, Uddhava, in the end of the next line, Nishamya, he heard these teachings about the path to enlightenment, and these teachings of whom? Uttama Shloka Vachaha, the Vachaha, the words of Uttama Shloka Sri Krishna, the one who is most praiseworthy. Okay. Still working? Okay. So, after Uddhava heard these teachings from Sri Krishna, which guided him on the path to moksha, what was Uddhava's response? By the way, if this crashes right now, you're going to be waiting for the answer. How did Uddhava respond? Arjuna said, I get it. He said, Nashto Mohaha. What is Uddhava's response? His response is, he is Baddha Anjalihi. I'm demonstrating. Anjali is this mudra. Baddha, his hands are folded together in this gesture. And Uddhava is Priti Uparuddha. I'm breaking the words apart. Priti Uparuddha Kantaha. His Kanta is Uparuddha. I'm being silly, I'm sorry. That's a little too silly, I think. Anyway, his throat is stuck. Uparuddha. By what? Priti. Tears. Actually, love. His throat is choked with love. Oh, you know that feeling when your throat constricts? That feeling. His throat is, when you get some really intense emotions, you know how you can feel it in the back of your throat? That's what he's describing. Okay. And when your throat is constricted and when you are, the last line, ashru paripluta akshaha, his akshaha, eyes, are paripluta, complete, pluta, immersed, filled, paripluta, completely filled with ashru, tears. His eyes are full of tears, his throat is... And the reason I'm demonstrating like that, as silly as it is when your throat is like this, what can you say? That's right. So what did he say? Na kinchid uche. He couldn't say a thing. he was like, ah, 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 ah. he was so... I'm being silly, which is in a way inappropriate, because what Uddhava is experiencing here is he is overwhelmed with gratitude for having received such an incredibly profound teaching. He is so overwhelmed, he can't say a thing. So Arjuna was able to say, I got it, nashto mohaha, my confusion was removed. But Uddhava was absolutely overcome by his emotions, and he remained there silently, crying, couldn't speak, his hands folded, he remained silent. And certainly silence, not only is it silence in the context of the story, but silence is certainly a good metaphor for enlightenment. Because when your mind is perfectly silent, do you suffer? You are utterly free from suffering when your mind is perfectly silent. So in this way, silence can be a metaphor for enlightenment. So with that verse, we have concluded our study of the Uddhava Gita. No doubt you'll be wondering what we're going to study next. There's a class I've wanted to teach for a long time. We've studied the whole Bhagavad Gita through several times. There are certain verses in the Bhagavad Gita which are just extraordinary, and those extraordinary verses can be gathered into certain topics. So what I have planned is to take five topics. I'll introduce those five topics in our next class. And in each of these five topics, there'll be five verses. So verses like bhakti, topics like bhakti, karma yoga, nature of Sri Krishna, etc. So we'll break it up. We'll take five topics, and we'll go through. I keep looking down here. I'm waiting to see if it cuts out again. Has it cut out? No. Okay. So we'll take these five topics and five important verses on each of these five topics. So that will start then next Saturday. Good. Tomorrow, Sunday, of course, we'll have our Vedanta class, Upadesha Sahasri, at 10 o'clock, Satsang Q&A at 11, and we'll conclude with our prayers. Om Gananaham Tva Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavingavinam Upamashravasamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrenvan Uttibhisida Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Hatmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritangamaya Om shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.